This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello and welcome to Black Mirror Cracked, the podcast for all your Black Mirror needs. My name's Sachandrika and I'll be your host. Today we've got a very special guest, an actor from the episode San Junipero, the award-winning episode.
I was just blown away by how incredibly intelligent and engaging the show was. So I'm so glad that it's finally hit the U.S. and everybody's talking about it here as well. I'm Raymond McAnally. I played Greg in the episode of San Junipero, Black Mirror.
So you're a Black Mirror fan yourself.
But I first heard about it in the U.S. from filmmaker friends abroad. And I was incredibly excited when Netflix started to carry it over here, not knowing that the future held, you know, brand new productions.
So yeah, what is it like as a Black Mirror fan to get that script?
I guess a fan of any show that you get a chance to work on, there's no better feeling than to get to see behind the curtain and to actually work on the material. So I booked the show. It was, I think, 4 days before Thanksgiving. I was told at the time we were the first Americans brought over, a few of us were the first Americans brought over to film the new series. And I think Santa Junipero was actually the first one to shoot. And so there I was, you know, my family was actually flying in for Thanksgiving. And luckily my wife is an incredibly wonderfully supportive wife. And she said, go, you have to take this opportunity. So I left literally as my mom was flying into California for the holiday. So I had very little time to completely bury myself in the script until the day I left. But it was like this golden ticket, this, you know, piece of I don't want to be sacrilegious, but just piece of, you know, scripture that I get to walk around with and hold on to and study and hopefully bring to life in a good way.
I've spoken to a few actors from the show for the podcast. Everyone says they're a fan already and they're so excited. What is it about the show?
Well, as an actor, you know, the scripts are so well crafted. There's so much, as we say, meat on the bone. You know, you can really sink your teeth into the characters and the storyline, and everything going on with you is very, very clear as a character. So that's a joy to work on. You know, it reminds me of a good play in that way. There's an importance to the way every line is crafted, it seems. That speaks to the literary ability of the writer. Charlie and Annabelle were fantastic. I had just gotten to London and they were kind enough to, you know, I was coming from the West Coast of the United States, so they were kind enough to give me some downtime to kind of get over some jet lag so that I'd be ready to go. And unexpectedly, I was called to set, I think, the first day. And I thought, oh my gosh, I guess I need to be ready. And they called back and said, no, we didn't mean to freak you out, but Charlie and Annabelle would just like to meet you. So I went to set and I met Charlie and Annabelle, and it felt like a collaboration. It felt like the kind of set where everyone was valued. And I, coming from the United States, I was also just kind of blown away at the way takes were run, the way we accomplished each scene. It wasn't wholly and completely different by any means, but there was a familial quality that you normally only get to see when a show's been up and running for a while in the U.S., when the crew and the cast and everybody kind of gel and get to know each other. But this seemed to have that right away, and I think that was because of Charlie and Annabelle.
From the Greg on paper, how did you envision him?
The thing that struck me was his willingness to help this, I mean, in a large part, stranger. They had, I don't know if it made it into the final cut, but they had communicated a lot, at least in the original script, over the San Junipero system. And so they had a way for the people in the hospital to communicate with people like Yorkie and people in her kind of comatose state. And so he did know her. And I took it that they were friends, but it's a big leap for a human being to kind of cross that bridge into, I see a wrong here and I'm actually actively going to do something pretty, pretty drastic and something that alters my, you know, my, at least recorded life to an extent, to put yourself on record as having married someone, and all of that. And I just felt like that was the key into this very, what seemed like an incredibly open-hearted person. And then that fed into how he reacted when sharing the information. And there are so many clues in the writing, if you want to find them, that I really don't know where my take on Greg started and where the script ended. It was easy to understand who he was just off the page.
It's a bit like Greg is willing to have a green card marriage almost, but the green card is to San Junipero because Yorkie can't get there any other way.
I think that's a great comparison.
It's a favor he's doing. It's a really kind thing. And usually a character who's introduced just after the twist in Black Mirror, who knows what's going on in the way Greg does, usually they're very cynical, grim, like Rollo Haynes in Black Museum, like, oh God, this world is horrifying. But actually Greg is the opposite in Such a Surprise.
Yeah, actually, when I came to visit set to meet Charlie and Annabelle, I didn't get to meet Owen Owen Harris, the director, because he was just swamped. I think maybe we did meet in passing real quick, but they were filming the reveal that Yorkie's first walk through the club in San Junipero, the bar, and Tucker's, I think, is the name. So I rolled in and there was this just incredible cast of dancers and people that I thought, I mean, it didn't feel like I was even rolling up to a set. It felt like I was rolling up to the party. So that was a fun introduction. And then working with Owen was so much fun, you know, as a stage actor, which I think was one of the things that interested them and me as a choice. It's very rare, you know, if you're shooting a series, at least over here in the U.S., you'll get your master shot, which kind of encompasses the whole lay of the land. And then you will start parsing up the dialogue a little bit as you go from master shot to two shot to close-ups. And we never did that. We ran it every time like a full scene, like you would, in my experience, more in a play situation. And I kept waiting, you know, for us to start isolating things and getting moments that Owen wanted. And he just, as a director, wanted to let it live and let any tensions or anything that were going to come out in the full scope of the scene instead of parsing it up. And I think that's a testament to, or I think that led to one of the things people respond so viscerally about the episode, is that there was life being lived in a more continuous way, at least in the scenes that I shot and the things that I saw being shot.
You're right, it's actually a really long take when Greg is sat at a table with the older Kelly character and is kind of explaining to her what things have been like for Yorkie and her family and her background.
Mm-hmm. You know, it could be very expositional. You know, it could come across as very, like, I'm just giving you the backstory. And Owen worked with, you know, with both of us on reminding us, you know, of the circumstances for these characters and all of that. So it didn't slide into this, and here's the backstory the audience needs, you know, sort of thing.
I agree with you. I think it could have been really expositiony, but a couple of things are happening. The audience is desperate to work out what's going on. He's a nurse, but he's part of the kind of that machine, which is, we just discovered there is a machine. It was a simulation. It wasn't real in the way you and me are real, I suppose. But But yeah, again, he's a kindly guide to this, as opposed to the ending of White Bear, where the reveal is horrifying. And I spoke to Douglas Hodge in an earlier episode for Rollo Haynes and Black Museum. Yeah. He's also, you know, works on the stage a lot like you, and mentioned similar things, how you're both used to TV being a certain way, but this is closer to theatre. Mm-hmm. What's a great benefit for you as an actor and for your fellow actors? And do you think the audience gets something different from Black Mirror because it takes from theatre a bit more?
Yes, I think you get more depth of character. I think the actors, when you're asked to run full scenes and you're asked to work more like we do in the theater, you know, good film acting and television acting is, I don't draw a distinction between any of them, but there is something to be said for letting a scene run, whether it's on stage or on screen, letting the actors find the moments in between. And find what strings together the moments by having to live it instead of stopping and starting and having time to think, you know. Almost every school of acting boils the definition of acting down to the phrase acting is doing. And that is very true. Oftentimes actors can get very in their head, as we say, about what is to happen next or why they're saying what they're saying instead of feeling it in their bodies and discovering it like we do in regular everyday conversation. There's a lot more long takes and life in between lines and moments.
So how long were you on set for overall then?
It was maybe 3 days, I believe. And then I was very jealous that the rest of the cast got to go to Cape Town. Even though I loved my trip to London, it had been a couple of years since I'd been there. So it was quite wonderful. And I think my third day on set was actually my birthday. And it falls near Thanksgiving as well. So they threw me a quick little birthday party. I believe that was the day I wrapped. Which was a lot of fun to be spending your birthday not only working but working in another country, and then they also threw the Americans a Thanksgiving on that Thursday. So my first day on set, I think, was technically our Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S. And so the caterers made us a Thanksgiving dinner while we were working. It was actually really really nice. All the beach scenes. I think all the interior San Junipero scenes were still shot in London. We shot all of the, I guess, I've always struggled to say what that facility is. It's not a nursing home, some sort of advanced assisted living. All of that was shot in London. I believe all of it was shot over, for the most part, at the Olympic Village.
I interviewed the lady who voices the dating app from Hang the DJ. So Gina Bramhill, it went out like 2 weeks ago. She was really good fun. And she said her script didn't have the ending. And not because I think she's not allowed to see it, because she's not in she's not in the last scene, because they kind of, we switch to the real world. It's actually really similar to San Junipero, that we're in a simulation and we don't know it. And then we move to the real world and the dating app coach isn't in that. So she didn't know until she watched the show when it came out on Netflix. That's so funny. So did you get to know, like, did you know what was happening in terms of the plot?
I think we benefited from being kind of the first show. We were kind of under the radar. A lot of people didn't even realize it was coming back around, or that they had started production at least. So nobody was out there, I guess, internet sleuthing for scripts and stuff. But that's, sadly, it's becoming more and more common that when you go to audition for shows, and sometimes even when you do get the script, if it's a well-established show with a lot of following, you don't get all the tools that you used to get as the actor. It can sometimes be like pulling teeth to get a full script for even just to audition. You know, you've been given 12 to 15 pages of material to read for the audition, but you don't know the rest of the script. And that can be kind of frustrating when you're trying to craft the full character, you know.
When you first read that script, was it easy to imagine? What did you think? Were you really surprised by that twist, or did it kind of make a lot of sense, or what was it like?
My memory of reading it was the same as watching, you know, my wife and friends see it for the first time, because my wife was also already a fan of the show. I turned her on to it, so she had seen all the episodes of the previous season. So she would put her fingers in her ears if I mentioned anything or was running lines, because she just wanted to wait until the episode came out. But I sat there reading the script, and I remember having a very similar reaction. I remember just, you know, as you're turning the page, you're like, how does this work? How does this world come together? And then, or how is this possible for them to be living here, and but also in San Junipero? And I think that's probably the way it is to read every Black Mirror script. You cannot help but just be a full-on audience member the first time you're reading something like that, because it does kind of fire all pistons. It makes you sit there and go, wait, how does this work? And then you get just enough information that keeps you hooked. It was actually a really exciting script to read.
That's so great how you describe it. It makes you like an audience member, because you have to try and imagine what's coming around the corner and what's this going to become and what does this mean?
Right, because oftentimes as the actor, you know, especially when you just have, less than 24 hours to prepare the audition, you're trying to understand the script on a whole other level. And for whatever reason, for lots of good reasons, I couldn't do that with that script. I had to read it once just to read it, you know, just to enjoy it.
I guess because Black Mirror is taking us into new worlds, that you have to try and understand what's going on first and what facet of human life it's taking way into the future. And then you get into, well, what part of this is my character have and mm-hmm. how do I make it live?
I think that's part of the complexity, what you just described, what makes these episodes feel like films. These are each one is a new world. And as that audience member, you have to engage yourself to understand. You have to be committed to it to understand what that new world is. And luckily I think that's one of the reasons it's so loved when somebody's turned on to it, is these worlds are so engaging. You kind of cannot help but fully jump in and do your best to figure out where this is going and put yourself. I don't think I've watched a single Black Mirror episode that didn't make me ask that engaging question of, what would I do if I was in this situation? You know, what if I was Yorkie or Kelly? What would I do?
Yeah, gigantic philosophical questions are asked in San Junipero.
Well, I think secretly that's what we look for in art, in expression. We spend so much of our daily lives trying to avoid those big questions, because we have to get through the day. We have to do our jobs. We have to, you know, feed the kids. We have to have these, you know, momentary flashes of normalcy. But so that we subconsciously seek out things that remind us that there are more important questions out there. I mean, I always have. I was a philosophy major in college, and even studied at Oxford for a summer studying philosophy. And so a show like this really, really speaks to me. So, but I don't think it's just because of the way I'm hardwired and my affinity for asking these big questions. I do think most people like to be reminded that they haven't figured that out, and that there are multiple different possibilities, multiple different scenarios. One of the things I loved most about studying philosophy was when I had to defend my dissertation. You know, we will spend the next 2,000-3,000 years still asking these questions, and to me that's exciting. And I think that is the basis for part of Black Mirror's success. It's very human to wonder about these gigantic questions that might never be answered. Technology can't take away these difficult questions. You actually end up kind of opening Pandora's box and creating more problems than you had in the first place. You know, it's we talk about it in terms of you know, what Yorkie and Kelly are facing in this story is very similar to the ethical questions that come up in the medical industry around, you know, gene therapy and elongating life. They're playing God. They're elongating life, perhaps beyond the natural intent. So how do we deal with the fact that technology can do this? And how do we figure out as societies around the world what we're comfortable with? So that moment at the end, it kind of snaps you back to the other part, the other reality in the story. So I think I've come away thinking more about that. Like, where are they? How is their consciousness now in a machine? So I hope I, you know, making that kind of commitment, it kind of reminds you of what we're all agreeing to when we do get married, when we find that significant other and we say that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. It just feels so much more final, or so much more of a commitment to say I'm going to be uploaded into a machine with you for the rest of our consciousness. Because it's not just the rest of our lives and my heart stops and I'm gone. It's my conscious, which I assume can live on forever. It's a crazy complex thought.
Yorkie's situation reminds me of the other very important character in A Coma, Carrie in Black Museum in the second story. Mm-hmm. And you can really understand the impulse to want to communicate with someone in a coma. And I think the idea of a coma again brings up gigantic philosophical questions, and it recurs in Black Mirror. It's clearly something Charlie Brooker and Annabelle Jones are really fascinated with. In this case, it's kind of a really the most positive outcome you can have.
Yeah, it was so interesting. You know, as the actor, you're thinking about the internal life of the character. So I don't tend to think a lot about my the way I might be coming across on camera. And it wasn't until we saw the footage, that I love the way that Owen, all the shots of me are from an up angle. They're shooting up at me, and you get to see this huge size difference between myself and Elder Kelly. I mean, she's just tiny compared to me, especially with the way the shot is made. I realized just as an audience member watching it and removing myself from the character, it was this beautiful way to accentuate that character's protectiveness. Here you have this big, you know, teddy bear. You know, he could pick her up and wrap his arms around her and hold her and protect her, like an angel, like a security blanket, and just envelop her. You know, and it I think it's just beautiful. Whether intentional or unintentional, it just adds to those layers in the story, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the song is Heaven is a Place on Earth, and Charlie Brooker did say that they weren't sure they could do the episode without that song.
Right. Well, I know, and that soundtrack, I would love to see the numbers on how the sales of that song skyrocketed. But there's all kinds of... I'm surprised that there hasn't been a Tucker's pop-up. I don't know if those have caught on in London, but my wife and I just went to a Twin Peaks one here in Los Angeles, and they seem to be, you know, these themed pop-up bars and restaurants that kind of capture the vibe and feel of a show. I should probably Google and see if anybody's thought to do a Tucker's, because it would be a good one. I think they would they would roll for quite a while on that motif.
Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. What made you say yes?
The fact that it was about Black Mirror. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of effortless. You can't help but want to engage with that audience. Everybody that has written me and has, you know, said that they were a fan of the show and a fan of the episode, they've been just the best version of of internet conversation. You know, I don't know if that's because it tends to speak to people who are engaged with, you know, ethical and moral questions or not, but it's not the normal, you know, internet trolling and weird commentary that you can sometimes get when people see you on screen and feel the impulse to reach out to you. All the Black Mirror fans have been really cool to talk to.
So that was Greg from San Junipero. Amazing to speak to him in real life, and really great to get a bit of a glimpse behind the curtain of the San Junipero set. So if you've got any thoughts about today's podcast episode, about San Junipero, about Greg, do tweet us at Black Mirror. I love saying that every time. So Black Mirror C, three R's for the Black Mirror Cracked Twitter handle, or you can get me directly on at Sir Chandrika C. And again, both of these handles are written on whichever platform you are listening to this podcast on. We love to hear your thoughts, so definitely tweet us. So if you enjoyed this podcast, please do rate, review, subscribe, upload it to your consciousness, if that's a thing yet, and just generally let other Black Mirror fans know it exists. And that's it for today. Speak again soon. Bye.